Tell me when you've pressed.
It's on.
It's on.
Yeah, it's okay. Pressed.
Hey, welcome to Comic Culture, the radio show. Is it a radio show or is it a podcast?
It's a podcast now. It used to be a radio show.
The podcast that talks about all things comic and all things comic culture. I am Walter Duralia.
And I am Chris Owen.
And for the next little while, we're going to be talking the talk.
Talking the talk, and I'd say walk the walk, but we are not really walking anywhere.
We're not walking anywhere.
No.
No, we're stationary.
I don't think, by the looks of us, we haven't walked anywhere for a long time.
We could use a good walk,
Chris. Yeah, we really could. Really can.
So I don't know, Chris.
Well, what's new with you, Walt? Have you seen anything? Seen any good shows lately?
No. What was I watching on Netflix? You know what I tried to watch?
What's that?
It was so cheesy that I had to stop watching it. Was that Designated Survivor?
Designated Survivor. I've heard of it, but I've never seen
because
it.
Because it stars Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah.
Who I call a Canadian, but he's,
right.
But he's the son of Donald Sutherland,
who's Canadian,
know, a very famous Canadian.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I
can't get into those shows; they're all the same.
Well, they're entertaining.
Yeah, yeah,
and they're kind of soap opera-y.
Yeah,
and it's funny. I don't know. Like, I think with this, since COVID came on. There are shows being watched that would never have been watched.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because literally,
yeah.
People have watched every single thing.
Yeah, it's time, yeah.
Chris, it's like, time. Okay, I got to watch something tonight.
And then what are you going to watch?
You go through the Netflix. Okay, I saw that.
Saw that.
You literally, in the last 12 months, have seen...
Everything.
60 series.
Exactly. Yeah. So... my wife and I watched a show the other day, and we watched the show called The Queen's Gambit.
Queen's Gambit.
Have you ever heard of it?
Yes, I have. That's the one. I haven't seen that one yet. That's the one with the chess player.
The chess player. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny because it started making me think about, you know, with chess. Believe it or not, because, you know, I'm a nerd and you and I are comic book nerds.
Yes, we are.
I started thinking about chess in comics.
Chess in comics.
So, well, one of the things was, you know what? It's for some reason, there's that famous JLA. I think it's JLA, issue number 2 or 3 of them all.
Yeah.
Like a chessboard going on. And that kind of thing.
Yes.
And that seems to have been recreated lots of times as well.
I remember, Chris, in the early 2000s, us as a comic shop, we had... we had those chess boards.
Right.
And they were like expensive.
Oh, like the DC ones.
DC ones. And I think the Marvel ones. And I think you got the pieces individually wrapped.
Yeah.
You had to buy.
You had to buy each one.
Yeah, each one.
Yeah.
And they were like big. And there was like a Lord of the Rings version.
They were incredible. And then, of course, there's also that comic called Checkmate. Really crappy comic that came out a long time ago. Do you remember that one?
Vaguely.
I think it came out...
I'm too
out,
afraid to say I don't.
I know. Well, I think it came out in like the early, mid-90s or something like that. Checkmate was meant to be
I know the one. I know the one.
Yeah?
Yeah, Checkmate. Yeah, I remember. Checkmate. I think it was late 80s.
Is there any demand for those comics anymore?
If it's a first appearance... there's always demand.
Yeah.
But the problem is, once you get into... I remember the Checkmate. It was like Alan Baxter-y type of paper.
Yeah. It was more higher-end comic.
Yeah. highbrow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But it was... what was I going to say? It was... they become worthless once you get past the first issue.
Right,
you
know? Right.
Well, not the first issue, the first appearance.
First appearance, yeah. Right.
I think it appeared in an action comic.
I think you're right.
I forget what number.
And I know, I mean, the series, it was meant to be like a spy kind of thing.
Yeah,
it never really, took off.
Spy ops guys.
But the show was really good. The Queen's Gambit show was really good.
Oh, I thought you said the Checkmate show
was good.
No,
Checkmate series is terrible.
Oh, is there a Checkmate series?
Well, there was. Not anymore. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, the TV series. No, there's no TV series.
Right.
No.
Oh, you mean the comic?
The comic series was terrible.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But the Queen's Gambit TV show was really good.
Right.
So I was watching that the other day.
Uh-huh.
And so it made me think of the comics.
Right.
But also, there was an episode where they happened to go down to Mexico.
Ooh.
Now, it started also making me think about, you know, now you're a fan of jazz, right?
Sure, I am.
So, I mean, I'm sure if I played this for you, you'd know what it was.
Oh, don't. Art Balpert and the Tijuana Brass.
Okay. So yeah. So you obviously it's very
everybody
familiar. Everybody
that.
Knows that.
Yeah.
You know.
Everybody worth their weight in salt.
Of course. Right. But it also started making me think about comics.
You're starting to worry me with all your thinking.
I know. I was doing a lot of thinking lately. Yeah. I had nothing else to do. It's with,
I guess.
You know, right. So now, what I'm not too sure about is I actually had to Google it. There's not very many comic characters that are from Mexico.
Comic characters that are from Mexico. How about, I don't know any. How about those wrestlers?
Mexican wrestlers?
With the humidor mask?
Yeah.
What do you call those masks?
I don't think. Lucador?
Is that what they're called?
Yeah, not
What's a humidor?
No, that's, a humidor is, well, it's something that you store cigars in.
You can't put that on your face,
no,
Chris. Well, you could try, I guess. You can open the front.
That should be our next costume for Halloween. I am El Humidor.
El Humidor, give me your Cuban cigar. Are we allowed to do Cuban accents?
Well, that was a Cuban accent.
Tried,
yeah.
I'll just say it was Serbian.
There you
go. If I get into trouble, I'll say it was a Serbian accent.
Not very many Mexican characters that I can find. The two that really stood out was the new Blue Beetle.
Wait, the new Blue Beetle is Mexican?
Is Jamie Reyes.
Jamie Reyes.
Is the new... Yeah. At least...
Jaime Reyes.
Jaime Reyes?
No,
I don't know.
Jaime?
I don't know.
Because they say their J's like a...
Oh, do they?
Blue Haze.
I don't know.
Jaime Reyes.
I'm sure we're offending lots of people here, but we're not trying to.
We're offending their intellect.
We're listening to this
That's
show.
Right. But nothing else.
So, and the other one was, there's Aranya, the spider girl.
Aranya.
Which was Anya Corazon.
That's what they do when they're happy, I think.
Yeah, well, probably, yeah. That's So, anyway, so when I was watching this show, this Queen's Gambit,
uh-huh.
a song came on.
And Albert and the Tijuana Brass?
Well, I thought it was, and uh-huh. I'm going to play it for you to see what if you've heard it before. Okay, so...
I don't reckon... I mean, but, a little bit crancy.
Well, okay, so... Right? Okay, so a little bit crancy, but
the
also...
Those were the guys that did that background music to the Spider-Man.
So, series. Yeah. So, if you ever have listened to any of our other shows, we always often talk about Krantz music, as the Krantz was the production company that produced the early Spider-Man cartoon, and so we just call it Krantz music.
Right,
we don't really
yeah,
know.
Yeah, yeah.
So, okay, so...
There's
so,
trance music, and then
there's
trance music.
So I listened to this, and at first I thought it was... I even said to my wife, oh, that's Herb Albert and the Tijuana
right,
Brass.
Yeah.
It's not.
Right.
It's not.
Right.
But it is by a guy named Sid Dale.
Sid Dale.
Sid Dale. So
Hold on, Chris. Sid Dale.
Sid Dale. Have you ever heard of him?
Never heard of him.
Never got a dinner. So he is playing this... He was the guy of this...
You know who you remind me of right now?
What's that?
That guy... Burke. That guy...
Burke?
Last name was Burke, and he had a TV show in the 80s called Connections.
Oh, I like that. Okay.
And before the internet, he would connect, you know, this to that, to that,
Well,
to
this
that.
Is sort of a musical
yeah,
connection.
Yeah, I'm liking it.
Okay, so I listen to this, and I look it up, and so this guy said, Dale, and, you know, as you said, sounds very familiar,
uh-huh.
right?
Uh-huh.
So, now... He also came up with this little ditty that I'm sure you've heard before.
Little ditty. baby.
Okay, so the first one we played was Spanish Flea by Herb Albert and the Tijuana Brass. Then we played Mexican Highway by Sid Dale.
Mexican Highway.
And now that one was called The Hellraisers by Sid Dale. Now, if you didn't recognize that song, you were absolutely 100% correct in the fact that that was actually one of the songs from The Amazing Spider-Man cartoon.
From
the Krantz song. Yeah. Right. Okay, so I start doing a little more digging in this stuff.
Look at you.
And so now, if you're not, I mean, obviously you know what it is. You've heard this before, but let's just play it again here quickly.
Spider-Man does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man.
Okay, so you get the idea. So you all heard that. Now,
what? Now, how's that connected?
Okay, well, I'm going to tell you in a minute.
Oh.
I'm going to tell you in a minute.
You're going to
so,
string me out.
But what I want to know here, what I want to know is, what impact do you think the Spider-Man cartoon has had in comics? And do you think that comics these days, like, what is it, would you say the Spider-Man is still, like, the number one hero collectible comic to collect?
Well, I mean, Spider-Man as a character is, you know, top shelf, upper echelon, A-lister.
Would you say that he's probably the most sought after?
Well, in terms of collectible comic books,
yeah.
In terms of just, I'm speaking as a comic book collectibles expert.
Right.
Even though we can stretch that word, but the Spider-Man title, I would still argue, is the most collected title in comics.
Okay, interesting. Now, do you, I mean, I'm going to put you on the spot here, but
do you
have any ideas what recent comic books may have sold that are like maybe first, like Amazing Fantasy 15 was first appearance of Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. Like recently, has that sold or in Spider-Man 1 or 2 or anything like that? What are some of the values of that?
Chris, there hasn't been a recent sale of 4.0 Spider-Man. Amazing Fantasy 15s can go into high 20,000s US dollars. We just sold a 0.5 resto incomplete copy.
Resto meaning it's restored.
Restored, yeah. Incomplete copy graded by CDCS for $7,500 plus US dollars. Right?
For 0.5.
Yeah, 0.5 restored incomplete.
Incomplete.
Not 0.5.
Yeah.
0.5 could be a dog. But it's still all there.
So
this is a restored, incomplete 0.5.
So it can you get? I don't even know if you can get any worse.
Pretty well
than that.
Not.
It
well
still not. Have like a book. I mean, you can get pages, but
pages, whatever. But it's about as low as you can go. And that got $7,500. So
oh
you're talking
goodness.
About, the entry level into an Amazing Fantasy 15, into that game, into hey, I'm a player.
Yeah.
Is you know $7,500, $8,000, and it still remains, Chris. To me, one of the three big grails.
I think so.
In superhero comics.
Yes, for sure.
Okay?
For sure.
You got Action One, which is probably the least desired for the hero, but the most desired for what the book represents.
Yeah.
You got Detective 27, which to me would be my grail.
Yeah.
And then you got Amazing Fantasy 15.
Yeah.
That's not to say that there are not books worth more. Like that Batman number one, the 9.4 that just sold on Heritage, got 2.2 million.
That's crazy.
That's the best known copy of that book. I think the four copies of Amazing Fantasy 15 that are graded 9.6.
Okay.
I think each of those can garner at least that amount of money. Because I think one sold about 10 years ago for 1.1.
Really?
But it's a totally different market.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Oh, right? For sure.
It's such a stronger market and stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, you know, and you and I have talked about this multiple times, in the ability of a hero or of a character or of a property to jump from generation to generation seamlessly and be embraced by that younger generation. Like characters like Donald Duck and Mickey Mouse were unsuccessful.
Right.
They couldn't transfer over into the new gen.
No.
Right.
Or even later characters like Richie Rich.
And Richie Rich. Well, the list goes
hot
on and on. But I was
yeah.
just like, I think Mickey Mouse is the best example. Cause I often say that, you know, the world's largest entertainment company, their logo is a character that nobody knows what it is.
Yeah. True enough. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The mouse series.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, but Spider-Man has seamlessly, up till now at least, just jumped from pajama to pajama to pajama.
For sure. It just seems like it continues to dominate.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. So the Spider-Man theme song. Right. So of course that was, you know, and I'm just making some connections. So mm-hmm. we had the Sid Dale, the Hellraiser song, which was in the Spider-Man cartoon as well, right?
That's right.
So now the Spider-Man theme song, as I was doing some more digging, now it was written, the song was composed by Paul Francis Webster and Bob Harris. Now, Bob Harris was a longtime editor at Marvel Comics as well, so we know that name. But interestingly enough, I didn't know this. The original song was recorded at the RCA Studios in Toronto, where it was, where the cart, because the cartoon was also produced, well, like in the Toronto area, right?
Right.
So now it had 12 CBC vocalists, which was interesting. I didn't know that.
Oh, cool.
It's Canadian content there.
Yeah.
And it had members of the...
Barbara Frum was... she's probably too young.
Probably, yeah. But it had members of the Billy Van Singers.
Oh, my God.
Now, of course, if
don't
you're...
Don't take me down to Billy Van.
Well, I'm gonna. So now, for those...
You know, the you know, and I'm going to cut you off for a little bit.
Yeah.
Just a seg... Not segue. What's the word I'm trying to say? Hijack, I guess.
Hijack, yeah.
Yeah. The fact that you and I are going to talk about Billy Van. And what brings me great pleasure is the fact that a lot of people listening don't know who Billy Van
they
is.
They may not know who he is, right, but they're going to know what we're going to talk about.
Right. But the fact that we're going to get them to Google Billy Van and just check out that work,
yep,
is makes me happy.
Yeah, absolutely.
An unsung genius.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So Billy Van and the Billy Van Singers. So mm-hmm. he was a big time, big deal in the 60s.
Right.
And then moving into the 70s as well. Now, Billy Van also used to do commercials for Colt 45.
Right.
As well as our favorite Billy D. Williams, Lando Calrissian, also used to do Colt 45 commercials.
Right.
Now, of course, if you don't know Billy Van was the lead and probably mastermind behind the TV show Hilarious House of Frightenstein.
Frightenstein,
yes. Not Frankenstein.
Yes. Frightenstein.
Yes. And this is a show...
And recorded here in Hamilton, Ontario.
Exactly, recorded here in Hamilton.
At the old CHCH Studios on Main near Dundurn.
Correct, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, so now, of course, I can't not play... I couldn't find a good clip of the opening theme song,
right,
but this was one of the songs they would often play in there because they had a little musical interlude as well.
Of course they did.
Oh, wrong one. Hold on.
Oh,
wrong one. There we go. Here we go.
Man, memories, Chris.
Yep. Okay, so now, of course, that was, for those of you who aren't sure, that was Clap for the Wolfman by the Guess Who, also Canadian band.
Yeah, of
okay,
course.
That was not my intent, but
right,
but in the show...
Burton Cummings. Randy Bachman.
Yep, mm-hmm. Yep. In the show, in Hilarious House of Frightenstein, Billy Van would dress up as a wolfman.
I am the wolfman.
As a sort of an homage to... Wolfman Jack.
Wolfman Jack.
Who was famous radio DJ.
Right.
And he was a DJ. In the late 60s and
in the 70s. He would put a new song every episode on the turntable. And then he would go out in front of a square green screen.
Yep.
Where they would throw some real heavy psychedelia
that's
up there
right.
behind.
Yeah,
and he would do
right.
that funky little dance.
Yep.
And, excuse me, Chris, always halfway through, Igor... would come in.
And, that's right.
And dance
that's right.
With them.
And they would have some of this weird black light thing where
yeah.
you'd only see the giant eye on his belly or
right,
whatever.
Right, 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 right.
Yeah. So great. Now, here's the thing. So one of the greatest parts about Hilarious House of Frightenstein
mm-hmm.
is that we had Vincent Price on that show.
Right. Oh, by the way, before you start that, anybody they can go and on YouTube. And Google Hilarious House of Frightenstein. Billy Van played literally
oh, yes.
six incredible characters on that show. Yeah. The librarian, Broomhilda the witch,
Count Frankenstein,
Count Dracula.
Count Dracula,
yeah,
sorry.
He was Dracula. He was the Wolfman. He was the Oracle.
He was that explorer guy.
Yeah. Ooga booga.
He was the Oracle, Griselda.
That's right. Yeah, Oracle. Incredible. And you can catch... I would recommend that you hit the Wolfman.
Absolutely.
Just to check
for
out.
For sure. Absolutely.
Thing. And just let us know in the comments field on our post what you thought of the Wolfman.
Yeah.
Anyway, Vincent Price.
So Vincent Price. Mm-hmm. So I was actually doing some reading about him. So they asked him to do this show. Now, apparently the story goes that I guess his normal daily rate at the time was $12,000 a day.
Right.
Okay. Mm. But because he liked the idea of the show and because he had a fondness for children and for kids, because this is a kids show.
Right.
He dropped it down by... only 25%, and he was only charging $3,000 a day.
Right.
So that's how much that meant for that show.
Right.
So of course he did the intro to that as well, and he did the outro, and he did all kinds of great.
And he
clips.
Did all those kind of preambles.
Yeah, beautiful
kind of gothic voice of his.
Exactly. Now, not to be outdone here, we got to bring it back to comics for a second here.
Right.
Vincent Price comics.
Yeah.
It was Gold Key comics.
Uh-huh.
Are they worth anything?
No, I don't think, Chris. I'm trying to remember. I don't think Vincent Price had Gold Key comics. He had.
Was it Gold Key?
No. He had Vincent Price Presents, but they were later.
Oh,
they were
okay.
After Gold Key.
Was it?
Yeah. I don't think he had Gold Key. It was Boris Karloff had Gold Key.
Oh, maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
Boris
okay.
Boris Karloff had Gold Key. Vincent Price did have Vincent Price Presents comic.
Yes.
I think that was like already 80s.
Okay.
Stuff like that. But,
okay, interesting.
But those aren't worth anything.
No, that's too bad.
Yeah. But yeah, I think of Boris Karloff.
And I think, yeah, because he had Vincent Price Presents like the House of Something or Other
or
something like that. Yeah, okay. I remember that now.
But no, I mean, that guy was just, you know, mythical. I mean, he didn't Michael Jackson use him on Thriller, right?
Right. Yeah. So, which brings me to my next point.
Oops.
So that's all right. So hold on. So now he used him on Thriller, but only for part of it. So here we go. Here we have now Vincent Price in the Thriller song, which the Thriller was like, it may even still be the number one song of all time. I honestly don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But it was certainly number one for decades.
Forever.
For forever.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we're going to talk about Vincent Price, we need to talk about his last theatrical performance.
So, I don't know what that is.
So his last... No, he made a made-for-TV movie just a little bit after that. But his last movie that came out in the theater was Edward Scissorhands.
Oh, of course.
So,
you know what? I've never seen that movie.
So I've got a little clip here just to kind of... for Edward Scissorhands.
Edward Scissorhands.
All right, so that's enough of that. But
the end is near.
So Edward Scissorhands is kind of like a Frankenstein type character, right? So
what's the guy's name? Billy Depp?
Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp was Edward Scissorhands,
right.
And so that was a little clip of Ice Dance by this guy named Danny Elfman.
Right, Danny who?
Danny Elfman. He was the composer of that music. Okay.
Danny Elfman.
Now, hold on.
Hey, before, because I got a tangent.
Okay, go ahead.
I love this because it's just memory lane. It's just like boom, boom, boom. The neurons are firing here, Chris. Was Vincent Price part of the old Hammer Studios, the Hammer film?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's
absolutely.
Right.
Peter Cushing and Vincent Price.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what I loved about
the Fall of the House of Usher.
You know what I loved about those damn things is... just the grainy sepia tone quality.
Oh, I love those movies.
Like, there's something about
it's
funny when you watch. It's almost like a I'm gonna tie it back to comics like I always do. You know, I bet you and I can look at the page of a comic and the art of a comic and kind of guess based on the grain of
the thing, age,
the age and the era and whatever. And same as when you watch a film.
Oh, absolutely. Right? Yeah.
And you could kind of look at the grain of the film and the color hues of a film and go, you know, that's 60s or, oh, that's early 70s.
Yeah.
Hammer studio. You know, that's, well, and even that has that 80s look to it. You know,
even then the Hammer films have a separate look in from the 60s and the early 70s than they did from other movies. Like the Hammer films are very, I mean, you talk about The Pit and the Pendulum and The Fall of the House of Usher. You know,
well, it's almost like, even I'm going to go out and say, the old CBS TV series is like, so the early 70s Columbo had a different grain to the film than, say, the late 70s Rockford Files.
Yes, absolutely.
I know we're showing our age. I mean, we're, neither of us are that old, but I'm just saying we watched it in reruns.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Absolutely.
It has that kind of, it has that weightiness to the film in that era, right?
Yeah, and I think that's part of it. It was on film and not digital, right?
Fair.
So, yeah, it's different. Yeah, yeah. So Danny Elfman, just getting back to Edward Scissorhands.
Yep.
Now, I know you know who Danny Elfman is, because he also composed this song. Okay, so, you know, like, that's obviously the intro to The Simpsons.
Simpsons, yes.
Right.
Okay. I haven't watched The Simpsons, but I did recognize it.
But you recognize it. It's very familiar. Now, so Danny Elfman, he composes Ice Dance for Edward Scissorhands, which Vincent Price was in.
Right.
Vincent Price also made a cameo in The Simpsons, but it was just his voice, not his likeness, rather, not his real voice.
Right.
But now, I know you also know Danny Elfman did this song as well. So again, this little
look at Danny Elfman.
Danny Elfman is a big deal.
Busy boy.
Well, he's been around a lot. He also did The Nightmare Before Christmas and all kinds of stuff.
Hey, let me go on a tangent. My younger kid, Alex, he likes sound and he likes films and stuff and he likes soundtracks and stuff. And he's a big fan of that Zimmer guy.
Oh, Hans Zimmer. Yeah,
Hans
Hans
Zimmer.
He's fantastic.
He goes, oh, man, listen to this. Listen to this scene. Listen to this part.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm trying to act interested. You know, it's like, oh, man, that's good. Can you go away? I'm trying to read this book.
You know what? I was that kid when I was in university.
He's really just respects. I'm going to try to remember the guy I liked for soundtracks.
John Williams?
No, before John Williams. The guy that did those late 60s, early 70s stuff like Dirty Harry, stuff like Bullet, Laszlo something.
Oh, I don't know Laszlo. I know Ennio Morricone.
No, Laszlo. And it was really jazzy.
Oh,
it was kind of that kind of detective jazzy, you know, noir-y almost. But not noir, but modern. Hey, this is the new age. It was Aquarius plus noir plus I don't know what else. You know,
nice.
Hippies.
I like it.
Yeah,
I like
so
it.
I got to get. I forget the guy's name, but
We'll look it up later.
Yeah, okay.
You can also tell one of my favorites is James Horner as well. He's done a lot of like Star Trek and Rocketeer and all kinds of cool stuff.
Anyway, this guy.
So Danny Elfman, you also know. You may also know this one here. It's building. Don't you worry.
Sorry, I wasn't sleeping.
you look, have a puzzled look on your face. Yeah. Here. That was
Star Wars.
No, that was the intro to the Batman movie that that Tim Burton did.
I never saw that.
So now it all comes. You never saw the Batman movie?
No.
Oh, well,
no.
Well, that's understandable. You're a little bit older than I am. But it's okay. So now all of a sudden, coming back to comics again.
Right.
Right.
Wow.
Now, so that was in like 19...
That was good, though. I like that. I like that build-up.
It was a good build-up.
Yeah.
Yeah, good build-up.
A little bolero in there.
So now, in 1990, I remember... that was a huge year for Batman. Everything was Batman then, right?
Like that's right.
And that's when I remember seeing merchandising to the nines and keychains and all kinds of stuff.
You name it.
Yeah.
Coffee mugs.
And it hasn't stopped, it seems.
Right.
All right. So now... Here's what I'm going to say about Batman.
Here's the thing.
Batman, now do you think... Now, hey, before Batman, we had, as far as live-action superhero movies go, we had Superman.
The best movie of all time.
Greatest movie of all time.
For superheroes.
For superheroes. Yeah. Superman. And of course, Superman 1 and 3.
Okay,
2.
Talk about 1.
Okay, but we have those Superman movies with Christopher Reeve.
Right.
And we had Batman in 1990.
Yeah, 89.
89, 90? Was it 89?
Okay, whatever
it was.
Right around that era, yeah.
What else did we have before 90? Like, did we have anything worthwhile that is really...
We had Bill Bixby in The Incredible Hulk.
TV show.
We had Linda Carter as Wonder Woman.
TV show.
That's a good point.
In the theaters, we didn't really have very much.
No, we didn't.
No.
Yeah,
didn't
right,
have very much.
Right,
nothing worthwhile.
No.
They tried to make a Captain America movie.
Wasn't that for TV though?
No, they tried to make it for the theaters, but didn't work.
Right.
They made Roger Corman made a Fantastic War movie that never got released.
Right.
So lots of stuff that, you know, never happened. It really didn't do very well.
What, so do you think it was because of the lack of the ability for the CGI?
That's probably part of it. Yeah. Lack of being able to immerse yourself into that, in technology for even costumes and stuff like
right,
that.
Right.
You know, they didn't have the kind of plastics.
But also, I don't want to say it. I don't know how to say this the right way, so I won't. I'll say it the wrong way.
Okay.
This is the 80s. I think comics really changed around 86, 87, you know, after Dark Knight and after, like, I know Miller was doing that stuff with the Elektra earlier.
Yeah.
But it was too one-off.
Right.
It took Batman, it took the Dark Knight, it took Alan Moore with Watchmen, and then by the late 80s, everything was, like, realism and everything changed, right?
Yep.
And the problem is, no matter how much in the, like, 1985... you and I, let's say, if we were of age, wanted to believe that they could make the guys, and it was mostly guys, writing the stuff in New York and everything like that, they just treated it like a juvenile
throwaway. They never took it seriously.
This is their job. They got to get a thing.
Yeah.
And then it kind of turned serious after that Moore, Miller...
Right.
Just dumped everything on its head. There were guys trying it before then. No, don't get me wrong. There
yep.
were people putting forays into serious stuff before then, but it just never caught traction.
Never clicked.
And you know, and the industry itself was against it. They
right.
were just like, let's just churn out more for the kids.
Right.
You know, let's
just
and they'll eat this crap up.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll eat this stuff up.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know, that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
Right?
I know, I agree. I mean, up
so
until...
So that's why I don't think... That's why the first Superman movie was such a breath of fresh air and a glimmer of hope and light.
It still is.
Yeah,
still awesome.
Right. Because it just wasn't treated right.
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 So I guess what I was going to get at was the Batman movie, I think, proved that there was now this ability to make superhero movies and have them be successful.
Mm-hmm.
So that gave rise, believe it or not, to... Because I think people forget that comics in the 90s, I mean, they were doing okay, but they, you know, there was a massive surge of speculation. And then after that, there really wasn't a whole lot going on.
Yep.
And in the 90s, you had no movies coming out, but you did have... the movie Blade, the Vampire Hunter. Do you
right.
remember that?
Yes, I do.
So we had.
I never saw it, but I do remember.
So well, here. So in there's a little snippet from the movie Blade.
Right.
Blade.
that's enough
of
that.
Is that Kraftwerk?
That's New Order Confusion Pump,
right, okay.
Pump Panel Reconstruction or something like that.
I like that.
So anyway, so Blade, believe it or not, there is a strong feeling out there that the reason why Marvel still exists is because of Blade.
Right.
Because Blade was the first successful superhero movie for Marvel.
Right.
Believe it or not, and they believe, and it was actually the first movie produced by Marvel.
Right.
So Marvel had nothing to do with previously producing movies. Blade comes out, and they actually were heavily involved in it, and it did really well.
Right.
It had a trilogy.
Right.
There's three movies that came out because of Blade.
Never saw none of them. I was going to say either of them, but that would have been wrong.
The first one's good. The next three are okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So now, here we have
Wesley Snipes.
Wesley Snipes, correct. So now, and they're rejiggering whatever you call it. They're gonna bring Blade back again. It's gonna be
is Wesley Snipes gonna be one of those old guys?
Probably, I don't know. But the guy that's gonna play him now is gonna be Mahershala Ali, who was he's been a great in a whole bunch of different movies. He was in Green Book, a great actor. Anyways,
right? Okay.
So we have Blade coming out now. Blade's success leads to the X-Men franchise. So we have the Spider-Man movies all get bought up by... Well, Spider-Man gets bought up by Sony.
Sony.
And the X-Men...
got bought up by Fox.
By Fox.
Right.
But
Fox Movie Studios.
Fox Movie Studios. Yes. So now Fox is able to make all these X-Men movies.
Fox.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yep. Make all these movies. And now, of course, now that leads to this. Okay.
Hello.
A little bit of explicit content there. Sorry. So now
was that Prince?
No. So that was Team Headkick.
Okay.
So
I believe it.
So now we have X-Force from coming off of the X-Men movies. Well, sorry, I shouldn't say X-Force. We have Deadpool.
Deadpool.
So that's from the Deadpool 2 movie.
That was from the Deadpool 2 movie?
That was from the Deadpool 2 movie.
Okay.
Okay.
I haven't seen that one either.
Clearly.
Yeah.
So we have...
So Deadpool 2, is that still Ryan Reynolds?
Yeah, still Ryan Reynolds. So oddly enough, we talked about Blade.
Uh-huh.
So Blade, the third Blade movie was called Blade Trinity.
Yeah.
And Ryan Reynolds is in that movie.
As Deadpool?
No. Oh. Just as a vampire hunter kind of guy, right? So... We now have those connections
as
well.
Ginseng.
Yeah.
So Helsing's psychic.
So we have...
That's all I can come up with.
Deadpool is now connected to X-Men, which is connected to Blade because of all the Marvel movies. Now, the only other thing that I'm going to say about all this now is clearly Deadpool is a huge... huge, huge success these days. They're going to be making another one.
Massive.
Now, what is an average, New Mutants 98?
Yes.
First appearance of Deadpool?
Yes.
What is that selling for these days?
Chris, it's funny with that book is that book has just recently spiked, beginning of the new year here. Just shot up. I think it was always around $1,000.
Around $1,000.
9.8.
Okay,
CGC 9.8 was always around. You know, when it was in its lull, it was in the 800s or 700s.
Yeah.
And then when it was doing okay, it was 1,100. That type of thing.
Yeah.
It was always around $1,000. I think right now it's above $2,000.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe
they're specking.
Well, you know.
The problem with that book, let me keep going.
Yeah.
The problem with that book, I might be lying if I am. Doesn't really matter. That might be the most graded 9.8 of all graded 9.8s.
Really?
There's literally, and I'm going to, I'm going to not even be close, but there are literally 4,000 9.8s.
No kidding.
Something like
that. Yeah.
Thousands upon thousands upon thousands of 9.8s.
Really?
So there's no issue with supply on that book.
So, but just such huge demand.
Just huge demand.
Right. Now, do you think that... Clearly, that demand is going to eventually wane at some point, I would think.
I don't know. We always think that with comics.
Yeah,
I've learned over the years never to count comics out.
Yeah, well, that's true.
There's a way, how there's a huge flood and things, cars get washed away and people get washed away and everything gets washed away, but then somehow the ground drinks it all in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Same with these comics that you think, oh, they'll never be worth anything because there's so many of them.
Right.
And then they just kind of get soaked into the fabric of collecting them.
Right.
Right? And then, you know, and you want to go buy one and there aren't that many out there to available, and when they are, they're $2,000.
Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah.
So well, heck, I remember a year and a half ago they were $800.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Well, there is speculation because I know that, I guess, the head producer for all the Marvel movies, Kevin Feige, has said that there is going to be some sort of involvement with Deadpool in one of the next movies in the future. He hasn't said when or anything like that, but so maybe that's some speculation going on there.
Chris,
as well.
I'm sorry, I'm going to cut you off. I noticed you did a little burp there.
I know I did.
And I did a little burp as well. And Chris's and mine's burps, if we want to mention that.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Are gloriously being produced by Cowbell Shinding Craft Beer from Huron County, Ontario.
Yeah, it's actually a great, great place. If you ever get a chance to go up there, yes. I highly recommend. I mean, obviously, you probably can't go for a tour now.
Right.
But when you can, you should go.
Yeah. The you know, and it's never been more true to say, I need more cowbell.
So true.
Never been
so
more
true. So true.
This is a good beer.
Shindig. Shindig's a great beer.
Shindig.
Cowbell has lots of interesting.
Cowbell Brewing Company.
Yeah, they've got a lot of different interesting names, all based on the history of Blythe, which is where the city is.
Uh-huh.
Things like Absent Landlord, because apparently the guy that owned the town actually lived in Scotland for a long time. And anyway, cool stories like that.
Laddie.
So, I'm going to...
Where were we? Sorry.
Okay, so Deadpool.
Deadpool,
of course, was...
Never saw the movie.
Great movies. Yeah. Now, that was part of the whole 20th Century Fox mutants movies, X-Men, all
right,
that stuff,
yeah,
right?
Deadpool.
Now, the only other one that's come out of that since then has been the New Mutants movie.
Was that a movie?
So there was a New Mutants movie. Yeah. I'm going to play a little bit of the soundtrack here.
Oh, that's good. Is that Hans Zimmer?
No, Mark Snow.
Mark Snow.
This one's called Hey Yogi.
Hey Yogi!
Hey Yogi! Alright, so that's enough of that. So
Hey Yogi or Hey Boo Boo? No.
Hey Boo Boo!
No, Hey Yogi!
Yeah, it's probably Hey Boo Boo.
Yeah. No, it's Hey Boo Boo.
Hey Boo Boo.
Yeah. Whatever you say, Mr. Forest Ranger, sir.
What's in that picnic basket?
Picnic basket.
Anyway, so New Mutants movie comes out. Kind of a bit of a flop because it came out during COVID-19.
Right.
And you know, I'm gonna say I did watch it,
uh-huh.
And I don't really know. It seemed like it didn't know what to do with itself.
Right.
And I think because this is a movie that came out during the transition when Disney bought out
Fox. Right.
I think there was meant to be lots of ties to the X-Men, but mm-hmm. they didn't want to have that in there because Disney was going to do new stuff for the X-Men.
Right.
So, and they couldn't really do anything with any of the other characters because it was around.
They wrote it last second while they were filming.
Cut!
All right, Wolverine, move out of the scene.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Okay.
So, now, the only thing I'm going to add to this is, so remember that song I played at the very beginning of the show was
Tijuana Brass?
Well, the Mexican Highway. It was this one.
The second one.
It was this one. Well, yeah, it was this one. Okay, so now that was from...
I thought that was going to go the Bossa Nova way, but it didn't.
No, it didn't. Yeah, it's strictly the 60s swinging.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
So now that was from the show Queen's Gambit.
That was from the show Queen's Gambit.
That one was. That
you
was
told me that before, didn't
I
you?
Did. I did
See
tell
how,
you
I'm
that.
Connecting.
Okay.
See how I'm connecting that,
now,
too.
Now, you know what the final connection is? The actress who played Magic in the New Mutants movie
uh-huh.
was Anna Taylor-Joy, who played in the Queen's Gambit.
Get out.
Yes. So.
So she's the lead.
She's the lead in the Queen's Gambit, and she played Magic in the New Mutants movie.
My goodness.
Ileana Rasputin.
Ileana. Yeah. Now, what's her first appearance?
Oh, that's a good question.
Ah.
Now we are getting somewhere. Do you know it?
Yes, of course I do. What kind of comic guru would I
I'm
gonna
be say,
without knowing?
I'm going to say it's an X-Men comic.
Okay, maybe.
Well, it's not... It's okay. Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
Oh. I'm going to say X-Men 138.
160.
Oh.
It's close. Good. Excellent. Close. You did an X.
Excellent. So I thought that was interesting. So, as I was watching this, I thought she looked familiar, and then I realized that it was the same actress.
And it got your squirmy little brain scrambling around, producing this fantastic connectivity.
Connectivity. Musical.
I really like that. Chris.
Comic
that
musical connection. You know
what? What I liked about it too, what I really enjoyed about what you did there was how, you know, comic books and music and just everything just
it's all
so
connected,
interconnected,
right?
Yeah. You know?
And, I mean, and this is, I mean, there are shows about comic culture, right? So it's all about everything.
That kind of stuff. Wow. 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 Yeah. I don't think music gets enough, you know, the fact that you and I love Krantz so much and Krantz was kind of like a big part of our just enjoyment of that old Spider-Man series.
Well, so interestingly enough, so as I was doing this, so I found out that because we always call them Krantz. Mm-hmm. It's not really Krantz, but right. I always thought it was one particular group that did the music.
I thought
music.
It was a guy named Krantz.
No, Krantz is the movie studio. Is the,
I know,
is the theater,
but I wanted it
studios.
To be the guy named Krantz that worked down at the deli. You know what I mean?
Hey, go tell Krantz to get some more music going.
I need more pastrami on my. Give me a pickle. Don't forget the pickle.
So, Krantz. Music, what we call Krantz music,
right.
was not so. I played the one by Sid Dale. There was like four or five different Sid Dales. There was a whole bunch of guys, different guys, who were all composing music that they took
Sid
from.
Dale?
Well, no. I'm just saying, like there was a guy.
Oh,
there was
okay.
Not literally.
I took you literally,
not
Chris.
Four or five.
You had me. And you would have got away with it too. Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. I mean, I don't know. Is that still going on? Obviously, it is still going on today, but there seems to be everything's so important today. Everything's so planned out and heavy and it's you know, the connections you made seemed all kind of happenstance and innocent and by chance and
right,
you know, and when you connect them together you see some sort of fabric, right? But now everything seems so, I don't want to use it in a bad way, but I don't want to use contrived, but planned.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, everything's kind of, the connectivity is so planned.
It is, yeah, and it's lost something because of it.
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, whereas back in the day, it was like, oh, hey, that guy worked for this. Oh, this guy worked for that.
Right,
and this guy did this.
And 6 degrees of separation.
Yeah, and that's really what this sort of was all about. I mean,
right.
And don't get me wrong, as I was doing the research for this stuff, I could have gone in a bunch of different ways.
Of course you could.
And, there was a number of different musical routes I could have taken, but this one kind of hit home for, I thought, for both of us, so I thought it was the logical choice.
Wonderful. You did some great work there, Chris. Thank you.
Thanks. So that's all I have for you for today.
Wonderful. Great show.
If you have any connections that you want to talk about, you know, be sure to email us and let us know.
Yeah, and hey, don't forget to check out Billy Van on YouTube.
Billy Van.
Hilarious House of Frightenstein.
And let us know what you think, too.
Yeah, and let us know what you think.
And, that's comicbookdaily.com you got to go to in case you're listening to this from some other site.
That's right. And the show's called Comic Culture.
Comic Culture, yes.
Right. And I'm Walt.
And I'm Chris Owen.
And we'll see you next time.
All right, take care.